Generally speaking, when I give an invitation, it's really just the purpose is to segue into the topic. But this morning's introduction, I spent a lot of time on it this morning, because through the years, I've given a lot of thought to what keeps us from wanting to be a servant. What keeps us from not being able to turn the other cheek or go the second mile? What keeps us from not seeing ourselves as people who should be living our lives in service to help other people to grow? And through the years, as I've thought about it, some things have kind of become clearer and clearer to me. And I have some scriptures. First, we're going to talk about what I think is the reason why we struggle with this, and then we'll talk about some scriptures that deal with this. So, as children, at some point in our life, first grade, second grade, maybe even in the home if we were a second or third child, we learned that people with greater abilities, stronger, smarter, better looking, they had an edge. They had an edge that if we had it, was very pleasant, and if we didn't have it, was bitter. It's very difficult. The best players always got picked first, always got picked last. It's hard. The best players are never cut. I got cut. Pleasing personality and you're popular. Beautiful and handsome and you have opportunities. If you're smart, you get recognition and awards. Now, as I said a moment ago, if we have these things, then we have a different issue. But this morning I'd like to talk to probably the most of us who didn't have maybe one or maybe once in a while one of these things, but we kind of went through the early years of our lives, our childhood, and sometimes into our young adulthood, struggling for our position. There's always a pecking order. And as children, we don't really understand, but we know where we'd like to be in that pecking order, and we'd like to be at the top. But most of us didn't reach the top, but it left us empty and with a longing, with a drive, an ambition to want to reach that level. And so some actually have become scarred. And that's one of the reasons. And the reason I'm dealing with this is because this is the greatest hindrance sometimes to us emptying ourselves. We just can't do it because of the mental and emotional scars and blocks and feelings that we've had through the years. And so when we understand that, we start to understand what I call the inverse pride of life. Because most people, when you think about the pride of life, you think about arrogant people. People who know everything, who have everything, who look down on other people, and that's what pride is. And of course, that's true. But low self-esteem and an ambition for power over other people so that we're at the top, that's a serious flaw. And as I said a moment ago, I think that's why people get so angry on the roads. On the road, I'm going to be first. On the road, I'm going to be the one that everyone else is going to treat with respect. And if that doesn't happen, people get angry. And brethren, we need to dig into this and look into this. And more importantly, we need to dig into our past and look at our past. Because sometimes these are the things that are keeping us from becoming great in the kingdom of heaven. It colors our thinking. It affects our relationship with other people. If I think you're looking down on me, or if you think I'm looking down on you, or if I think that I'm better than you, or you think that you're better than me, it's going to damage the relationships in the church, and it's going to create church problems. Because some of us do wear our sleeves on our shoulder. And the reason we do that is because of these memories that we have. And it's a serious situation. I said there were some scriptures on this. I think this is a good one. Three things the earth is perturbed. Yes, four it cannot bear up. A servant when he reigns. A fool when he is filled with food. A hateful woman when she is married. and a maidservant who succeeds her mistress. The servant and the maidservant, that's inverse pride of life. They've been pushed down, they've been mistreated, and now they're in a position of authority, and that's what's going to happen. Sarah's the same thing. Sarah comes up with this, what we might call today, harebrained idea. That since she couldn't have a child, she would allow her handmaid to have a child. Well, she didn't think about the consequences. Look at verse 4. He went into Hagar and she conceived, and when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress became despised. And that is what happened to many of us in high school, or in grade school, or on the job. We find ourselves, we've been pushed down and pushed down and pushed down, and now we have, this opportunity. Some think when they come into the church, this is their opportunity. And that's why you have factions in the church. That's why we have divisions in the church. Because somebody who has this attitude has come into the church, seen the wide open opportunities to become the top, and then they start lording it. And so this is important for all of us to think about. Are we like this servant who now is reigning? Are we like this maidservant who is succeeding? Or do we want to be? You see, the apostles, that's what they wanted. They were unlearned and ignorant men, and I'm drawing from an upcoming slide, but they struggled with this. I've met a lot of Christians who struggle with this. I struggle with it. You can't really, it's not a sin to be hurt when you're growing up. It's not a sin to have scars and to feel low, unloved, unwanted, unneeded. And then when an opportunity arises for us to become loved or wanted or needed, it's not a sin to move into that position. But as you can see, it can become a problem. And it's something we all need to be aware of, because we have the statement, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But even a small amount of power, as you see in these two verses, when a servant gets to reign, even if it's just as a steward over a small group of people. You remember the steward who beats his fellow servants? Or the man who is forgiven 100,000 or 10,000 talents, but when someone beneath him comes, he's going to lord it over them. And I think there's a powerful thing to think about in that, because Jesus is just like that person who forgave the 10,000 talents. And if we allow our scars, our hurts, our low self-esteem, our sense of littleness to force us to act like that person who grabbed the servant by the neck and said, pay me what you owe me, and then threw him into prison. And so this is a critical element. This is our everyday life. This is not talking about how often we pray or what we do during the Lord's Supper. This is the fundamental elements of our existence and how we feel about ourselves. We are the sum total of all previous experiences unless we've gone through this in our minds and we've moved away from it. And that's what Jesus is going to try to help the apostles do. And if we are careful and wise, he can help us too. But we can read these scriptures over and over and over again. But unless we figure out what these underlying currents are, what these things are, these eddies, these issues that are under the surface, what we call our subconscious. And this isn't a lesson on psychology. It's simply a lesson on the spiritual applications of the pride of life. And like I said, it makes some people go up here, makes some people go down here, but want to be up here. The apostles were unlearned, uneducated, ignorant, common, and ordinary. These are the translations of the two Greek words. I don't want to be ordinary. Do you want to be ordinary? Do you want to be considered common? Do you want to be considered ignorant or uneducated? I think we can all appreciate that the apostles felt downtrodden a little bit. And this opportunity to become apostles had created within them an ambition. And there wasn't anything wrong with the ambition. Jesus wasn't concerned with the fact that they wanted to be great. He was concerned with what they considered greatness to be. And so when they saw the Gentiles and the Pharisees and the Sadducees who acted like Gentiles, this is what they saw. They loved the best places at the feasts, the best seats in the synagogue, greetings in the marketplace, and to be called by men Rabbi. Can you recognize that? That's exactly what happened on the playground when we were kids. And that's exactly what happens in the workplace when somebody who is a fellow employee with us becomes a manager and suddenly realizes they have power and they start abusing that power. But instead of looking down on this, which is what we should do, we want it. We covet it. We desire it. And I use the word we loosely. Hopefully nobody here does, but I think we'd all agree that in our culture, we have a lot of this. This is what the macho American man is, and this is what the liberated female is in our culture today. There are people who are tired of being put down, and they're going to step on whoever they have to step on to get as high as they can get and enjoy the fruits, but they're worldly fruits. Now, the question, the reason I put that up there, do any of us, does this ring a bell? Does this strike a chord? Are we in this position? Most people are carrying what we call baggage. They're carrying problems. They're carrying these things. And the past, unless we forgive, unless, like Paul, we forget what lies behind, if we can't get past this, we can never get over. We can never get over this hurdle. We can never get to greatness. We can never get to being gold and silver in the house of God. Here's what happened. When they were in the house, he asked them, "What was it you disputed among yourselves on the road?" But they kept silent, for on the road they had disputed among themselves who would be the greatest. What were they arguing about? What were they doing? Well, they were doing the same thing that happens on the playground. They were doing the same thing that happens in the workplace. There's a pecking order. Who's the best looking? Who's the most popular? Who's the wealthiest? Who has the better connections? Who has the better job? Who has the athletic prowess? It goes on and on and on. Who knows more about this or that? And then they expect to be treated with deference. I don't know what they used. It doesn't say what they used. They had this translation says dispute. Other translations say discuss. This wasn't an argument. Maybe it was good natured. But it revealed something. And the Lord didn't like it. So he said, "What was it you disputed among yourselves on the road?" But they kept silent. Why would they keep silent? Are they proud of it? I think they're either embarrassed or they know the Lord isn't going to like it. They know that this isn't something that they should be doing. They've already heard him rebuking such things among the Pharisees. I have a parable a little bit later where, as Jesus sees how people are marking the chief seats and putting themselves in the positions of the highest they think they can go, which is again this same thing, he gave a parable and said, "You shouldn't do that. Go to the lowest spot and be asked to be brought up. Don't go to the highest spot and be told to go down." Well, in the material realm, that wouldn't matter. But in the spiritual realm, that's going to be something we all weep over. So he sat down and he called the 12. And he said, "If anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all." Now, is that ambition? Is it ambition to want to be last? Is it an ambition to want to be at the bottom, to be the last one picked, to be the one who's considered to be the lowest of the low? Is that ambition? Maybe a better question, is that my ambition? Is that your ambition? Is that what we want? Do we want other people to look down on us as a servant? That's why we don't turn the other cheek. That's why we don't go the second mile. That's why we get angry. We don't want to be a servant. Nobody's going to walk all over me. No one is going to mistreat me and not have to deal with it. But that's the very thing the Lord is telling us we shouldn't have. Jesus didn't have a problem with their ambition. He even said, the greatest will be. The Greek word for zeal and jealousy is the same word. Because the Greeks recognize something, and I think once we talk about it, we can recognize it as well. It's the same emotion manifesting in two different ways. Zeal means I see something you have or something you can do, and I say to myself, I could do that too, and I'm going to pull myself up to that level. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to be zealous, and I'm going to get there. Great. That's a good emotion. But the other emotion is I don't like where you are, and I'm going to bring you down. And I'm going to bring you down in my heart by jealousy. And in my deeds, with my words or my actions, I'm not going to serve you. If it's jealousy, it's impossible to serve someone that you're jealous of. You've got to get rid of the jealous. But if it could be zeal, well, what's the zeal directing us for? To go down. To go down instead of to go up. Jesus completely reframes the emotion and the goal. Greatness is attainable for the Christian. If anyone desires to be first, he should be last of all and servant of all. You know, that's not how we saw it when we were growing up. If I was the last one picked, I didn't say to myself, I'm the greatest one here. And if I'm always overlooked, when it's time for awards, it's time for to get a letter in school, it's time to get the proof that you were one of the people who succeeded. And I didn't get that. Well, that means I'm the best. If anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all. I don't know about you, but I've struggled with this through the years. I mean, I can see it. I can preach on it. But like Jesus said, I did another article yesterday about the foot washing, and Jesus says if you know these things, you're only going to be blessed if you do them. So we might have reached the point or the level of understanding where we can say, yeah, I know that. I know if I want to be great in the kingdom, I have to be a servant. Well, what does that translate into? How are we a servant? What are we doing to serve? Well, I lead a prayer every once in a while. You really think that's what the Lord was wanting for us to lead a prayer once in a while? Well, I help in the Lord's Supper. What is he really asking for here? I think he's asking for a complete change of our perspective on greatness. When we reach it, it won't be a problem when somebody cuts us off because we're last of all anyway. And they just put us where we wanted to be. That's, like I said, is that easy to think like that? No, it's not easy to think like that. When we're mistreated at work, well, we're already last of all. So persecution and tribulation, I'm already at the bottom. It doesn't bother me. But if it does bother me, then I'm not there. And I have a ways to go. So in Jesus' kingdom, the greatest is going to place himself at the very bottom, not just in the assembly, but everywhere around people. Remember what Paul said? I become all things to all men, that I might by any means serve some. I've made myself a servant. I'm a slave to those without law, to those with law, to those who are weak, to those who think they're strong. I'm a servant to them. Paul was at the very bottom. That's what he said in 1 Corinthians, what, chapter 3, chapter 4? I believe that God has placed the apostles as men doomed to die. We are considered the offscouring of all things. We are the filth of the world. We are reviled and we are mistreated and we are spat upon. And sound familiar? That's what they did to the Lord. The road to greatness for the Christian, it has to lead to the bottom. Isn't that what he said? Look at that verse again. If anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all. Well, in the church, I guess I could accept that. But what about in the world? What about in the workplace? Well, this is the ticket. This is the key that will keep us where we need to be when we are not where we want to be. All that we think we know is wrong if it makes Jesus' conclusion seems strange to us. If you read what he said, if anyone desires to be first, is he be last of all and first of all? If I can't understand that verse, if that verse doesn't make sense, and let's face it, brethren, every once in a while you're reading along in the scriptures and you find a verse and you say, that can't possibly be true. I got to read that again. Well, you read it and you read it and you say, it doesn't feel right. Well, then there's a problem. Because Jesus did, he created a paradox. He turned everything upside down. That's what the word paradox means. It means you take something upside down and inside out. It's not what you think it is. And it doesn't make sense the first time that you hear it. The purpose of greatness to the world, to us, since we were children, is to gain what greatness brings, which is glory, which is power, which is subservience of others. But in the kingdom of heaven, greatness gives the benefits of greatness to the least. In the church, in the home, in the school, on the workplace, on the roads. Greatness always gives the benefits that would come from greatness to those who are least. So all leaders, in God's eyes, should be serving those that they are over. So husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Sacrifice yourself for her. Love her as your own body. Serve her. You're the greatest. That makes you the least. How does that work? Well, we'll talk about that when we get to that subject. Same thing with fathers. We lead as servants. We give what we thought we would get when we reach that position to the person who's still coming up. Like I said, it turns everything upside down. Elders, the same thing. Woe to the shepherds of Israel who feed themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the flocks? You eat the fat, you clothe yourselves with the wool, you slaughter the fatlings, but you do not feed the flock. This is exactly what we've been talking about since the very beginning of the lesson. We have a group of people here who think that once they reach the level of leadership, they can use the people who are under them to serve themselves. And God says, what is going on here? Verse 4, the weak you have not strengthened, you have not healed those who were sick, nor bound up the broken, nor brought back what is driven away, nor sought what was lost. But with force and cruelty. You know, that's what we hated in school, was the cruelty of these people who were better than us. And cast it into our teeth and shoved it down our throats. And scarred us. Woe to the leaders. The word shepherd, it means leader. The leaders of Israel who feed themselves and not the flocks. I think that was Diotrephes' problem. Diotrephes loved to have the preeminence. I think it was the Corinthians' problems when they were dividing up into groups. I'm better than you. I'm a servant of Peter. Well, I'm a servant of Paul. I'm a servant of Peter. I'm sorry, Jesus. I'm a follower of Apollos. We're all arguing. Who's the better? Paul said, you know, I can't even talk to you like spiritual people. You're carnal. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. The same thing. Don't lord it over your children. Treat them like they are the master and you are the servant. Now, I understand it takes some effort to do that. How can a father treat his child like he's the master? Well, by giving him time, by putting his needs above our own, by training him up the way he should go, by putting him above you. Maybe your parents didn't do that. Maybe my parents didn't do that. So what? That's why we're Christians. We're supposed to change. We're supposed to change the ever-repeating cycle. We're going to break that cycle. And we're going to be the parents that we wish we'd had. And we're going to do that. On the final journey to Jerusalem, Jesus is about to be crucified. We're just weeks away. And here's James and John wanting to be number one and number two. Haven't learned a thing. All of Jesus' teaching, the Sermon on the Mount, all the teaching on various elements of what it is to be in the kingdom, the humility. And here they are. Grant us that we may sit on your right hand and on the other on your left in your glory. Now, they have no idea what they're asking for here. And you can read my article if you want to get some of the extra information. I don't want to go there today. But when the ten heard it, they were indignant. They were irritated. They were greatly displeased. Why? If they believe what Jesus believed, they'd be happy with that. Well, if that's what they want, they're just proving how little they are. I'm content to be last and servant. I don't really care what they do because what they're doing is wrong. But they didn't see it that way because they hadn't gotten there yet. Now they will. I think Peter finally got there. When Paul rebuked him, we don't see any indication of Peter saying, look, who are you to rebuke me? He took it. If he hadn't, Paul would have dealt with it and he would never have become an elder and he would have never written those last two books that he wrote. When the ten heard it, they began to be greatly displeased. Just like kids on a playground, just like high school, just like on the job or in the political realm. They wanted to reach the top. Never did they want to serve. If it hadn't been that way, James and John wouldn't have rushed in there to get that position, and the ten wouldn't have been so upset that they did. Jesus identifies this as a trait of the Gentiles. This is not a part of Judaism or Christianity. Jesus called them to himself and said to them, you know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles, and he's not just talking about emperors, senators, he's talking about bosses, fathers, and husbands, and Jewish leaders. They're all acting like Gentiles. They lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. That's what we've seen our whole life. We've been around Gentiles. We've seen it in the schools. We've seen it in the workplace, on the political realm. The goal is to lord it over. That's what they want. And that's what we were so unhappy that we didn't have. We wanted to exercise authority. One time, we just wanted to be the one to get the pick. Here's what we're going to do today. Oh, okay, we'll do whatever you say, Alan. If that never happens, never happened to you, never happened to me, it hurts. We want it. We see it in our government. We see it at work. We see it in the home, in the schools. Sadly, we even see it in the church. But it's the mark of Gentile and worldly thinking. But this Gentile concept is what the apostles wanted. When you bring that into the church, like the Roman Catholics have, when you bring that into the church, like most denominations have, with the flowing robes and the clergy and the laity and the power the Pope wields, you end up with Gentile thinking, Gentile actions, corruption, and ungodliness. It always works that way. That's why Jesus can't have his apostles acting like this. And he can't have his servants acting like this. But that's what they wanted. And again, that's what happened in Corinth. Brethren, I couldn't speak to you as to spiritual people, but as to carnal, as to babes in Christ. I fed you with milk and not with solid food. For until now you were not able to receive it, and even now you're still not able, for you are still carnal. For where there is envy, strife, and divisions among you, are you not carnal? Behaving like mere men, that's what Jesus was hitting at the root of. That's what Jesus wanted to destroy. And we have to figure out, have I got any of this? You know, as you look at what's going on in the political realm right now, this identity politics, people trying to make other people feel small so that they'll get angry and they'll do whatever it is they want them to do. It's worldly thinking. And even if we're in agreement with some of the things that they're doing, we need to understand that this is wrong. This is carnal, and there's no place for it in the life of a Christian. And we shouldn't be rooting for it, and we shouldn't be agreeing with it. We should be vexed over it. So all of these things that we have, all of this baggage that we're carrying, we need to leave it behind. Now, hopefully we can do that today. I hope that all of us can recognize that these are things that are holding us back. These are the weights. Remember in Hebrews chapter 12, let us lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily besets us. Anything that keeps us from wanting to be a servant is a weight that needs to be set aside. We don't want to act like the Gentiles do. They were being petty and small. We can't respond like that, or we're still among them, petty and small. Here's a better way. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition. There's the perfect term for what we've been talking about since the very beginning, selfish ambition. It's what that servant had, and when he finally reached it, he was a terror to be under. That servant who finally became the mistress, selfish ambition, conceit. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. There's what the first will be last, and last will be first. That's what he's talking about. If we'd had this attitude at school, we wouldn't have any baggage. We wouldn't be hurt. We'd just recognize those people are worldly, they're ungodly, they're sinful. It's as vexing to watch them do that it would be if they were committing stealing or adultery or any other ungodly act. This is an act of ungodliness, and I'm not going to be drawn into their ungodliness. In lowliness of mind, let each esteem others. How many others, Lord? Who is my neighbor? What did the Lord respond with the Good Samaritan? Even the people you despise the most are your neighbors. Let each of you look out, not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. That's how the last become first, and the first become last. Because the people up above are looking down, not like those shepherds in Israel, to eat and to feed and to use, but to uplift. Service in the kingdom of God is not reaching a position of greatness. It is reaching a position of service. And you know, the paradox really goes away when you realize, and this is where Paul's going to go next, and we'll save that for a couple of lessons down the road. But have this mind in you, which was in Christ Jesus, who existing in the form of God, did not consider being equal to God something to be grasped. He didn't have the attitude that so many people. Yes, having the equality with God made him the greatest. But he didn't grasp it. He didn't need it. He was willing to sacrifice it all because that's what great people do. Great people sacrifice their dignity. They sacrifice everything that has to be sacrificed in order to be last. And that's exactly what Jesus did. And that's exactly what Jesus is trying to teach his apostles. It shall not be so among you. Whoever desires to be great among you shall become your servant. And whoever of you desires to be first shall be slave of all. Are we getting it? Are we seeing finally what the Lord's trying to get across here? And do we understand now why those things we learned in school, why those things that sometimes we carry with us, they're holding us back? No man who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is worthy for the kingdom of God. And what did Paul say? Forgetting those things behind, what did he say? I count them but rubbish. I've suffered the loss of all things. He had to get rid of this stuff. We need to get rid of this stuff. We need to suffer the loss of these things if we're going to become great in the kingdom. It's not wrong to desire to be great, to serve, but it is wrong to desire to be great, to be served. Now, that's what we've seen since. And again, if we're the second or third child, that's what we've seen since we were born. That's the way it's been. The people with bigger and smarter and stronger always get what they want. And we can shriek, that's not fair, all we want, but it still happens. And then we go to school and it happens again. And then we go into the sports and it happens again. And we go to work and it happens again. We get to thinking this is the way life is. And then maybe they get after us for other things, racial things, prejudicial things. And we get to where we couldn't be a servant of someone even if we wanted to because of all this baggage. So we need to get rid of it. Not because of politics, not because of anything except the Lord says, if you want to stand before me on the judgment day and if you want me to say, well done, good and faithful servant, and you truly want to be great, this won't be happening among you. The paradox, which seems upside down, must become the reality right side up. And if we can't do that, then the Lord is going to be disappointed and the kingdom is going to be losing out on something very precious. So, very quickly, because I see we're running out of time, I still have several slides to go through. For Jesus to see us first, we need to use our power, strength, and abilities to uplift others, not to step on others, to give to others, not to use others. We must give to all what the Gentile rulers want and kept only for themselves. We need to give that away. The very things the apostles sought were the very things that needed to be sacrificed. Now, when we talk about spiritual greatness, we look at people like Barnabas, who sells his property to uplift the poor. We look at the Apostle Paul, who suffered the loss of all things and now has become the servant of all, who says, I will gladly spend and be spent for your souls. Moses was the meekest person in all the earth. Samuel and Jesus. Samuel didn't let one word of the Lord fall to the ground. Jesus emptied himself. Who am I going to put on the other side? Well, Ananias and Sapphira. Saul of Tarsus, Corinth, Korah, Hophni and Phinehas, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Can you see the difference between the greatness of these worldly people and the greatness of these spiritual people? Serving, sacrificing, giving on the one side, selfish, clinging, grasping, and putting others under themselves. Which side more clearly describes us? When greatness means giving up, where do we stand? Do you want that? Do you want to be great in the kingdom? I'll pass. I just want to stay mediocre. I want this. If true greatness is serving, sacrificing, giving to others. Where are you at right now? Do you want it? Is this something that's interesting to us? Or are we saying, you see, the answer to that question is going to determine how you feel next time I preach this lesson in another 3 or 4 years. And whether you say, oh boy, I've heard it before, I don't want to hear it again. Jesus gave us his own example. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. Not one time in Jesus' life did he ever use someone else to step up to another level. Every time in his life, he stooped down to raise someone else up to a higher level. Every first day of the week, we remember that because we're in the same boat. We are only lifted up because of his sacrifice. Because he wanted to be great. He wanted to be a great servant. In the Garden of Gethsemane, he sacrificed everything. He was crying, sweating. He was in agony. But he wasn't worldly. He stayed spiritual. He kept true. And he became our salvation. So here's our final assessment. Do we have enough faith to move past all of our hurts, all of our scars, all of our emotional baggage? Do we have enough faith to set that aside and become a slave to all? Maybe other people have always treated us like slaves and we didn't like it. Now we find out that's the path to greatness. Wow, really? Well, if you're not convinced yet, then next week I'll convince you more. Because there's lots of scriptures that deal with this topic. So, as we now pick up our song of encouragement, what is our assessment? Do we need to make some changes? We still get mad when people mistreat us and abuse us? Paul didn't. Jesus didn't. Because they were servants. And that was normal. That's what servants do. That's what the lowest of the low has to do. That's how it's been ever since we were kids. The lowest of the low has to do it. They don't want to do it. They just have to do it. Christians want to do it. So we have a lot of work to do, and I know we've covered a lot of ground in this material. This was the article I wrote in the bulletin last week, and it's also going to be posted this next weekend, if you want to look at this more closely. But as I said a moment ago, you will never be great in the kingdom of heaven until we learn these things and until we do them. So that's where we're headed. Next week we're going to look at the foot washing. We're going to consider why the Lord decided to wash your feet. If you want to know what it's all about, you can read the article I wrote yesterday. As we open the song of encouragement this morning, and we sing the song, if our heart's going to make melody with the song, then we have to make some applications and we have to make some decisions. And I hope you'll do that. And if we can help you in any way while we are singing the song, we give you the opportunity to make that known to us. Let's all stand and sing.